Hello, and welcome to episode 463 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. My name is Vince Hunt, and joining me, as always, is the creator of the comic series Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And a man who looks lovely in a polo shirt. It's Tony Esmond.
I'm so excited.
We
literally just, I won't say yet, but we did an interview, and then we have literally been so excited, like gossiping like children, about how excited we were, what a fucking lovely dude he was.
We are high on comics this week, and you're going to get a lot of comics talk from us and a very special guest. We were going to announce, well, if you've probably read the title of this episode, you probably know what it is.
But if you haven't,
we're still going to just make believe that no one knows. But it's certainly a fantastic chat that you're going to listen to. And what another one scratched off the list.
How lucky have we been? We've had these people on, like today's guests, like Miller, Garth, Pat, Terry Moore, all these people have come on. And, you know, some people in the comics world, you know, might be quite fractious and argumentative. All these people have been a fucking dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolute fucking dream to speak to.
And with us a couple of chances. You know what I mean?
I don't know who he's talking about there, Vince.
No, I don't know.
Don't do this to me.
While you're worrying about that, Dan, perhaps to take your mind off it, you want to read some comics, mate. So why don't you go to our sponsor, Global Comics? They are the place to go for digital comics. Every time we start these ads now, Tony's in shock that they actually sound fairly professional. But
Big shout out to the Global Comics people because they ever listen. We became slightly self-conscious this week because we thought nobody listened to our adverts. And then we realised
that people listen to us.
So a big hello to everyone.
I'm not going to fucking swear at all during
No. If you think we're going to swear, that's just absolute bollocks. Because we've got an ad to do, and it's for our lovely sponsors, Global Comics, who we love. If you read your comics digitally, why are you going anywhere else but Global Comics? Because if you look on Global Comics, whether it be the app or the website, you can see a huge library of titles available to read, from thousands of indie creators to hundreds of publishers like Image, Boom, Tokyo Pop, TKO Studios, Source Point Press, Humanoids, Dynamite. I might start adding to this list and see how many I can do before I run out of breath or pass out.
That's it in one breath.
There's quite a lot. And that's not even including all the individual creators and stuff that's on there. And the catalogue is growing all the time. Chaps, it's that time of the show. What sort of highlights have you noticed that you're going to read, have read, have checked out recently?
Well, I've reread a comic by one of our buddies, and which I still think is one of my favourite reads of this year, Mugshots, written by Jordan Thomas, art by Chris Matthews, and lettered by Lucas Gattoni. Class, British, crime drama, think Long Good Friday, get Carter, that sort of thing.
Getting a lot of buzz as well, isn't it?
Really good read, and I was chatting to Jordan about this a couple of weeks ago, and I said, I think this is my favourite book he's done, and I like his stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so get on that. Yeah, and get yourself a physical copy like I have as well. So, you know, I think you should do both. But I think with Global Comics, it drops day-date for a lot of the Mad Cave stuff.
Yeah.
It's on the Global Comics, but you can also, same day it's in the shops, it's on Global Comics, which is great.
That's great. I've added that to my list because I've not read that one. I really wanted to.
Good man. Yeah.
So that's that. Well, this is my recommendation is going to be tying into something else I'm going to be recommended later in the show. So that's a call forward. It's the Cats. I'm quite pleased with myself with that. Cats and Dogs. Man's Best. We've got Scrapper, Sabekistan, Bee and Puppy Cat, Hound, the Animal Castle, Scurry by Max Smith, which is absolutely fantastic. Obviously, Stray Dogs, Tony Fleet's previous guest, which is great.
Because they separate, there are sections, aren't they?
A special section, is it?
Yeah, they mix up all the time. So, like, if you want, like, comics about, like, animals or cats and dogs, like, there's fucking loads of them.
Is there a sexy lady vampire section?
There probably is, Tony.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, the ones on the front page at the moment, we've got Space Epics, Hey Kids Comics, AI and Androids, Cats and Dogs.
Yeah.
Got Start Your Engines, 12 Comics and Image. Oh, God, there's so much. Yeah. There's loads.
Yeah. I think they probably name it like Bloodthirsty Femme Fatales, Tony. So look out for that.
That sounds too cool for me.
That sounds too cool. Well, actually, that sounds like there's probably there's a comic there somewhere with that title. But if you make that comic, then you should put it on Global Comics because if you're a creator yourself, you can publish your digital comics on there for free. There's loads of great tools for indie creators to help with publishing, marketing, and more. And it's got an app. We use it, and it's great. It makes it easy to read. There's panel by panel stuff as well. You can follow creators, set reading status filters, release notifications for books, add stuff to libraries to read later. An absolute must-have for me, because I'm like, I haven't got time to read it now, but I'll read that later. Read that later. Read that later. You know, so many graphic novels that I'm probably get my nose is going to be bleeding for the next couple of weeks. But it's all in the name of comics. So whether you're an avid comics reader, creator, or maybe you're someone new to the hobby and just want to check out some great stories, Global Comics is the place for you. So go to globalcomics.com. That's comics with an X. Download the app, which is available on the Apple App Store or Google Play, and start reading and publishing digital comics like never before. Still impressed with it, Tony?
I live impressed with you, my friend. Yeah, it's a constant state of being impressed.
Wow. Wow.
You know what? As we're going to lead this in. You know who we were impressed by?
Who's that? No. Yes.
What is happening to him today?
I think the impressed bit is a lot of our listeners, be you regular, old or new, are going to be impressed that we managed to get this guest. And we're not going to mess about with any banter now, because we want you to listen to this fantastic chat with the award-winning and hugely successful creator of Bone, Mr. Jeff Smith. Okay, this week we are very pleased to be joined by an epic creator, someone who's a multi-award-winning creator of books like Razzle, Tukey, I think I've said that right, the upcoming collection Thorn, and a little book some of you out there you may know called Bone. It's our immense pleasure to welcome the one and only Jeff Smith to the show. Welcome.
Hey guys, thank you.
Our pleasure, man. This is a biggie for us. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, we've been looking forward to this for a long time. It's also been a great excuse to just get out the collected editions, and you have many collected editions of your work. And of course, as an independent comic book show, you are one of the biggest selling and most successful self-published creators out there. So there's a million questions we could ask you, but we don't have time for a million questions. So let's kick this off. How did you get started? Where did your love of comics and then wanting to make comics start?
I mean, I very young. I mean, my dad used to read the Sunday Funnies to me. So Peanuts was right away my favorite comic. Mm. And then I grew up in the 60s, so on Sunday nights, there was the Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color or whatever it was called, but Walt was actually the host of that show. He was on TV every Sunday night, and a lot of times Donald Duck would come out and walk around on his desk and stuff like that. So I knew Walt Disney made up Donald Duck, and I knew that Charles M. Schulz made up Charlie Brown and Snoopy. And so, and there was cartoons on Saturday morning, you know, Walter Lance in front of the Woody Woodpecker cartoons, right? Andy Panda, whatever. So I knew there's always like a name and some guy made up these cartoon characters. And early on, I wanted to make up cartoons. I wanted to make up my own cartoons. And I'm very early on, like when I was like five, I drew the first little character that would become Phone Book. And by the time I was like 9 or 10, I was drawing little comics, little stories with the Phone Bone and his cousin Phony Bone and Smiley Bone. In fact, I have them right here that I can show them to you.
Oh wow.
Nice.
That's pretty impressive for your age.
I was like 9 or something when I did this.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's Phone Bone and there's Phony. And on, I forget, yeah, page 2, you can see Smiley. There he is. Smiley comes in, and that's his only appearance there. But he crashes through the wall, apparently. I guess he's Superman. I don't know how. But he crashes through the wall, and they drop the precious gem down this vent. And then that's a little adventure story about falling into this giant.
At 9, man, that's great.
Yeah, this is that's better than stuff you see at Thought Bubble, Jeff.
So this, actually, what I'm showing you is the exact size. It's a reproduction. This is actually what was included. I did 3 of these between the ages of like 9 and 14. So this is the gem.
Okay.
And this is the son of the gem, which had a lot more of Smiley Bone in it. Okay. And then I did one when I was 14 that was called Phone Bone Meets Mel Brooks.
Wow.
That was the year that early in the year he did Blazing Saddles, and then by the end of the year he did Young Frankenstein.
Right. And
my dad took me, and like it was R-rated, but my dad loved Mel Brooks, and
yeah,
I remember the little old ticket lady was like, "Sure, I mean, I was 14." He goes, "Give me the tickets." That actually changed my life. My style, my way of thinking of comedy was completely born right then and there.
I can see that. I can tell.
I've never connected that.
That
before, but it's obvious, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now that you say it. Yeah.
So these books are not, these are the exact size. These look like the real thing. But they're not, they're included. Where's my camera? There we are.
There you go, gone.
They're
yeah.
included with the Thorn book. They were like, when I was in college, I did Thorn as a newspaper strip, and it was basically the Bone cast. But Thorn was, it was, I called it Thorn. This is the actual book.
Yeah.
So for listeners who can't see, that's the collection hardback in gold embossed and everything.
Yeah.
This was only available on Kickstarter because it was just it was too damn expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, we're gonna probably see what we can take to shows and stuff.
Yeah.
But just to let you see it, it's a very well made book. It's beautiful.
So Thorn is literally, I mean, we're jumping straight into it here, but like Thorn is an essential part of. You know, rather than be like a new collection that you've got available, it's also an essential part of your making as a storyteller and a creative, isn't it?
Yes, there was a review I got to see an advanced copy of, so I won't say where it is. I'm not gonna say much about it, but basically it said this is not for the youngsters as like a brand new adventure of their characters. It was more like for collectors and. Stories, people like that. There's a ton of extra material in here that goes into like what I was drawing when I was 10, which was these.
Yeah.
These are all in the back of the book. This is the front. This is the inside.
Oh,
back
wow. That's lovely.
These books were in these pockets. Oh,
so they're actually in pockets on the back cover. That is lovely, man. I love all that sort of thing.
That's a great idea.
Now, the actual book for the mainstream is coming out I forget. This summer sometime, like June or July.
Okay.
You would think I would do more up to do it.
I would have thought you've got quite a few things going on at once, Jeff, to be fair.
I actually was looking at, I keep all my books, I got all the books out that I've worked on in the last year. And there was the last year's Kickstarter, which was Tukey. I did Tukey book one and book two, big fat books. And then right before we started this Kickstarter for Thorn, we had most everything ready. I just hadn't done the covers and hadn't written a couple little bits I wanted to get to when I had this gigantic heart attack that ended up cardiac arrest. So it took me out of the world literally for a little bit. I was in a hospital for like a month.
Yeah, we heard, man. Yeah. How are you doing now?
I'm doing great. I'm great. I feel good. I have a slight memory lapses, but that's about it.
Well, it's good to see you. Like, I mean, you're so full of energy right now as we're talking.
Well, it's good. It's fun talking to you. You're like a self-published kind of like podcast. I'm actually excited about that.
we're all self-publishers ourselves as well.
We've done comics.
Yeah.
You guys do comics?
Yeah.
Not quite in your level.
No,
Jeff, I've got to tell you,
there'd be many could be. To be
fair,
but certainly, I mean, this show as well. We're very thankful to have like a community that of like creators as well. So, and we like, as well as like having fun and talking about comics and what we've read and recommending. There's always I like to like basically it was like we started the show just to mine everyone else's brains to make our comics better. You know, that it was one of those things. So
Happily, though, all of my information and journey is so out of date. Some of it's, well, Thorne is 40 years old, and you know, Bone is 35 years old. I can't remember. It's 91.
But yeah, saying that, Bone's an, like, for me, if you were going to ask me what is an evergreen graphic novel, like, yeah, book, like comic in general, Bone's one of the ones that just immediately pops to you. You can keep your Watchmen and all of that nonsense. Bone's the one that I always think, ah, right, okay, that's always
accessible.
I think Watchmen's a pretty good one.
Yeah, we do love Watchmen.
Yeah, we do. The skill set and philosophies of bringing your ideas into making a comic, they're always going to be kind of relevant. And I mean, some people struggle kind of just getting out a page or a single issue. So kind of those kind of lessons you can kind of teach about just that process of getting your stuff out there. I think they're timeless in a way.
Well, a lot of the path I took goes back to that Thorne comic book. I did, it was in the paper 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, for 3 years. And stop making noise. And then it was pretty popular. I mean, it started slow, but I mean, it really became popular. There was like a pigeonhole place for people to get letters. My thing was stuffed with letters every day, and that was no one really thought that was normal. It was good. People really liked it. I had a lot of hate mail too.
Come on. Really?
Yeah. I mean, because I talked about politics. I when I decided to do this book, it was the first time I'd looked at the whole, you know, opus of that newspaper strip and read it. I hadn't read those strips in 40 years, and in my mind, I had remembered them very bad.
Oh, yeah.
And that's part of the process, which I'll get to in a second. But I read them, and it was still my first attempts at comics, and some of it was a little goofy. But I had thought they were just unbelievably terrible. One of the reasons I thought they were terrible is that my dream was to do a newspaper strip, and in fact, I was showing Thorne around the same time that Watterson was showing Calvin and Hobbes.
Wow.
But I had two things that I would not break on. I would not sell the copyrights of them. I mean, my hero is Walt Kelly. He owned the copyrights on Pogo.
Right. Yeah.
So I just do that. And the other thing was Thorne was not Bone. Bone, by the time I did Bone, which was only 5 years later, but by that time, I had come up with this story. I'd perfected the story. I'd started it in Bone. It doesn't really quite go anywhere near where it goes in the comic book later. But it wasn't a novel the way Bone is. It wasn't a giant fantasy novel. It was more like the Sonny and Cher comedy or Rowan and Martin's Laughing.
Yeah.
So it was like, so there'd be there. The story was there. The characters were there that we all know. But then I would all of a sudden just start talking about Reagan or Jerry Falwell and the Moral Majority and do that kind of stuff. There was in the summers, there was a lot less. They didn't publish as often. There weren't as many kids around. So I didn't do story at all. I just did gag comics. I showed those to the comic book syndicates. Not comic book, I'm sorry, the newspaper strip syndicates. You guys know who they are. Right? They're the guys.
Yeah, very powerful.
Yeah. They're sort of like agents for comic strips, representing to the actual newspapers. Except they insist on owning the rights, and I just would not sell.
Right.
Even Watterson did sell it, although he was so popular, he was able to force him to give it back. So he did get his rights back, and I'm very happy for him.
Yeah.
But I was not able to take that same journey, and I just gave up after a while because they wouldn't I had like two syndicates, and I don't remember. It was King Features and Tribune Media. And they were like, I spent 2 years with both of those companies doing months worth of sample strips and sending them to them. And I would try to take their comments in there without changing my actual idea. But they fucked around with me for 2 years until finally I just screw it. I have to give up my dream. This is my dream. I believe these comics, my characters, are good and can do something. But I have to give up the dream of the daily comic strip. And somewhere in that 5 years, actually early on, because I quit OSU in 86. That was the year I opened up the newspaper one day, and there was at the Daily Columbus Dispatch, and there was a full color magazine section with pages devoted to Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns. I'd never seen a comic book in the newspaper before, and here's this lavish, beautiful spread talking about this comic and how it's changing everything. I have to go find that, and I did know about this comic book store called Monkey's Retreat, which was one of the oldest comic book stores in the country. And I went there, and I found, you know, the first two issues of Dark Knight, and then at the same time, I saw it for the very first. For me, this was like eye-opening. There was this small press section. I mean, and I expected it to be all, you know, rock and roll, sex and drugs and boobs and stuff.
Robert Crumb.
The Tick. I saw the first issue of Tick. I bought that. I saw Cerebus. I had never seen Cerebus before. And what else? Love and Rockets. All of Fantagraphics. I mean, I was like, what the? Okay. So I went there to find the Dark Knight, and turned out it was great. Frank Miller, I was like, this guy is doing something. What he was doing was new. He didn't explain everything in little boxes. He showed you everything. And it happened like you were watching a film, and it was exhilarating. I said, this is how you do it. This is how you do it. And plus, I didn't see Watchmen until later, but I had read Mouse, or Mouse came out at the same time. So those two things, it's like, these are books. These are real literary masterpieces.
Yeah.
And that blew my mind. I wasn't expecting that. And then I saw, Cerebus and Love and Rockets. And it was like, I'm leaving out names. I can't think of everybody. Dan Clowes, and I mean, just all those guys. I'm looking at this stuff, and I'm like, this is the most exciting thing happening in my universe, which is cartoons. And nobody even knows about it, except people that are already going to comic book stores.
Yeah. And those are books and creators that it's when you sit them, you talk about The Dark Knight, and those books sit next to them. These aren't books and titles that are like, yeah, they're tucked away. They swing with the exact same power as The Dark Knight, don't they?
Such an incredible period. Yeah, just such an incredible period. I've always wondered what you thought of Cerebus. I've always thought that you must be a fan of Cerebus.
I was very interested in Cerebus. I may not be as able to be as honest as I can't remember everything. Dave and I had a terrible falling out.
Oh, did you? I didn't know that. Sorry. Oh, okay.
We did. We don't talk anymore. But
oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
When I saw Cerebus, I recognized, hey, this is not unlike my World of Bone that I've been trying to sell the syndicates for years. And he and
Wendy Pini's ElfQuest and stuff like that as well was about the same time.
ElfQuest never
caught you. No.
No, I respected it. It was doing the thing I wanted to do.
Right.
But
materialized.
Yeah.
So, okay. Sorry, Wendy. Sorry. they've been playing the game for a really long time.
Yeah.
They're very But anyway, I just saw this world that your show celebrates, and it was sort of, I mean, it had already been going on for a while, but this I saw it as if it had just happened. And I, at that time, after school, I started up an animation studio.
Yeah.
So we, and I did that for like 7 years before I started the comic. But when I saw those, when I saw all those comics, The Tick and Cerebus and Love and Rockets, I was said to my wife, Vijaya, I said, I want to sell my animation studio and be a self-published comic book.
So this is a big moment for us, Jeff, as well, because when we're thinking back about your career, is you took a real leap of faith there, man. Didn't
yeah.
You? And you didn't just take a leap of faith, but you brought your wife along with you for the ride as well, who had quite a well-paid job, as I understand it.
Yeah, she had she was working in Silicon Valley in the mid-80s. But it was we moved out there, and like we moved out there. I don't remember the time.
Yeah.
So, that's cool. Yeah.
I'm going to say it's the heart attack, not cuz I'm old. but anyway, that all kind of did happen at the same time. At the same time I started the comic. Well, she helped me this way. It's a better place to tell the story.
Yeah.
She was like, she believed in me and she loves cartoons. And so she didn't, I thought she was going to say, no, you can't sell your company. Because cartoon books was, not cartoon books, character builders. I didn't know I had a thing for CB. But character builders, it was actually really growing. And pretty soon, we were the only independent studio that was working only on Hollywood feature films. We were there right when that Little Mermaid, all that happened. And then Paramount got into it. And that big blossoming in the mid-80s to the mid-90s, we were there. And but I was like, but I don't want to do this. This is like, I mean, this is not my art. I mean, it's fun. It's fun to see your drawings move. And it's fun kind of working with all these companies and stuff like that. But I thought sure she was going to say, you can't sell your company, but she didn't. Instead, she kind of got into it and she said, "What you have to do one thing for me. You have to write a business plan."
Okay.
Now, this was before the internet. This is in the late 80s. And I had to go to a library and look up business plans, how to write a business plan, and get a book, bring it home, read it. And I wrote a business plan. And at that time, the biggest selling self-published black and white comic book was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now, what I didn't know was that by 1990 or 91, whenever I actually got ready to go to a bank, the boom and bust of it back then had happened, but I didn't know that. So I said, I wrote this business plan that was very detailed. Talked about the kind of numbers that the turtles were selling, and I remember when we finally went to a bank. We went to the bank. But Jay and I sat down. We gave the guy a pitch. I think I had done some of the artwork. I might have had like a Xerox version of the comic. I don't remember. But he looked at everything we brought. He looked at the business plan, and he says, "We need to give you more money because you need to be able to get like at least two or three books out, and then we'll roll it." So we said, okay. And he gave us, I cannot overestimate how important it was that the JMA be write a business plan. Because I talked to lots and lots of young cartoonists who are starting out. None of them wrote a business plan. And some of them got lucky and they still made it. But I just can't tell you. It forced me to find out how the comic book industry works. I mean, I was reading the book. How do you do it? Well, I found out you got to You got to send it into a one of the distributors of the catalog. At that time, there were 12 distributors all over the U.S. and a couple in Britain.
Yeah.
Now I don't know who's the distributor in Britain now.
It's still Diamonds UK.
In Britain,
we've still got Diamonds UK, but it's
it was a very different world.
Hmm.
When I started, there was maybe 17 worldwide, and I had to get all their addresses. I had to contact them. I had to send them a copy of the book. I want to publish this in July of 1991, and I knew everything about all their companies. And Vijaya was helping me do all this. She was very, she didn't become my partner until like 94, I think. So she was my partner the whole time. But was working a full-time job in the computer business. But she showed me how to keep books. And Bone did take off, not right away. It took about 4 issues. It was really after the 3rd issue of Bone came out that I actually got a phone call. I was still working at my animation studio. I hadn't quit yet. And I got a phone call from a guy named Mark Asquith, who was definitely one of those people who knows everybody. He's like Larry Martyr, the guy that's Bean World, who also ran Image Comics.
Bean World.
And meeting this guy, he just called up to say, I just read the first 3 issues of Bone. I just wanted to call you. I forget how he found my number. He told me, but I don't remember. But he also said, I turned a couple of people onto your book, and I want you to meet them too. One was Charles Vess, and the other was Neil Gaiman. And they both called me. And I probably had to change my pants. Because that was very exciting. I mean, in 1991, Gaiman was, a rocket ship. With Sandman, it was crazy, and he actually did. So this Mark Asquith guy is a TV producer, and he used to do in the 80s and 90s a TV show about comics, and Neil was on there, and he sent me a VHS tape of the show, and he says, be sure you watch it all the way to the end. I watched it. It was kind of a cool, kind of nifty show. It's called Prisoners of Gravity. And at the end of it, Neil Gaiman comes on and does a real short review. But then they asked him, what books are you reading? And he spent his entire opportunity just saying, I've just read like the first 3 or 4 books of Bone, and it's great. And all this. And I tell you, Vijay and I almost fell on the floor. And
that's awesome.
Meantime, yeah, Vess. I talked to Vess. Charles Vess called me. And I'm like, oh my God, Charles Vess. I mean, he's one of the greatest fantasy artists ever. And I'm a big fan of his work. And I love the silly Spider-Man thing he did.
Oh, yeah.
He called up just to say, I love your comic. I just want to tell you, you need to come to San Diego. And if you can get yourself to San Diego to the Comic-Con, I'll give you, you can use half my table. And I said, what's San Diego?
Those days.
You got to come to San Diego. It's the greatest. Get yourself there and you can have half my table. So I did. And I showed up. I think I had three books was all I had. And it was amazing. Because with Charles Vess. So I'm with this really well thought of artist, and also all the people at San Diego that run San Diego all loved Charles, so they came would come by and check, and they wanted to check out, and who's your little friend? Oh, we'll check out his stuff. It was wonderful. So it was I'm acting like this just fell out of nowhere, but at some point I was talking to some local Columbus, Ohio comic store owners, like the guys at Monkey's Retreat. There's another guy at a place called Comic Connections. Store's not there anymore. He didn't survive the 90s walloping. But they were like, the two biggest distributors, which were Capital and Diamond, held a retailer, almost like a retailer con. It was, I forget what they called it. They called it a con. Oh, they come out and call it a conference. But the Diamond one was held in Baltimore, and the Diamond and the Capital one was held in Minnesota. I forget what Capital was, somewhere like that. And the comic book store guys I knew said, "We're all going together. If you want to throw your shit in our trunk and sit in the back seat, you can come." So I looked up these events. These Diamond and Capital both had these like 4-day retailer events that were only retailers.
Okay.
But comic book publishers were encouraged to come. We had a, you know, it was like a comic book convention the way you think of it now, where we paid for our booth there. We set up a little booth. I basically had an easel with big drawings, clip art, and now. And then we get there, and there's, I mean, in Marvel and DC had giant booths, just like they would later at Comic-Con. But what I had this crazy advantage. All the other companies sent salesmen to talk to the retailers. But I was actually there drawing little pictures of Phone Bone for people and giving them free copies of books. I had like three issues of Bone. And I was giving them that. And suddenly I had a line at my booth because people wanted the drawing from the cartoonist and get the free comics. And that made people like Don and Maggie Thompson from Comics Buyer's Guide, which was the Comics Buyer's Guide was the wizard of this. Wizard actually published July 1991, the same month the first issue of Bone came out, the first issue of Wizard came out. But they didn't catch up. It took them a couple of years. It took Bone a couple of years. It takes a couple of years to kind of get your feet. To me, the Comics Buyer's Guide, I was like, Don and Maggie came over to see me because it turns out Don and Maggie, especially Don, but both of them were huge Walt Kelly fans. I mean, they knew Walt Kelly shit that I had never even heard of. Like that he drew some little character that was like some bread company. And he drew dozens and dozens of comics that got given. Yeah, I didn't know anything about them. But I met them, and they I knew what they looked like because I'd seen them at some comic book shows I'd been to. But when I saw them, I was at one of these shows, and I had a line of people, but I saw them come around the corner, and they saw me. I saw them see me, and they held hands, smiled, and just walked right over. And we ended up we went to lunch later. I met them somewhere. And they wanted to do like a big story for the Comics Buyer's Guide. And it turned out really good. It was like, I mean, they asked me to do, give them like the 7 pages of the next issue, just a preview. So wow. I did that, did a big interview. They did like 2 solid full newspaper sized pages of just, that was great. That was really great.
Amazing.
So I was going to these kind of weird shows, and it was the moment, which I don't know if this would be very enlightening to anybody who started it now, but to me, realizing that my customer isn't the person who buys the comic book. My customer is the retailer, not Diamond, not the actual reader, but the world of comic book stores. And I just was like, that's what I'm doing. And I went to these shows like 3 years. And I mean, I was the only cartoonist. I was going right into the bar and I'm buying beers for Jim Hanley from Hanley's Universe in New York City, the one of the big stores at that time. And I met, a lot of these guys are gone. It's kind of sad to think about. There was the guy who owned a store in Berkeley, Rory Root. Jim Hanley in New York and Rory Root in San Francisco. These two guys, I just started drinking and like my local guy said, you got to look at his comic. So the next day they came and they looked at my comic and they went, oh yeah. And they ordered shit tons of it.
So it was awesome. That's awesome.
Figuring out who was really my customer, getting there, making the effort and all of a sudden, they were, then Jim Hanley would like bring other retailers, friends, over to my table. And that's really where that started happening. And then Charles Vest called and said, you got to get out to San Diego. So I was going to these retailer conferences before I even knew what San Diego was, the Comic-Con. So I flew out to San Diego, and I told you, it went well. I met a lot of people, people that were just of Charles, just was like, oh, well, Charles loves this guy. And it was, in a way, it sounds like I was, I don't know what to call it, rubbing elbows, but in a way it was. You know, I just went where the comics people were, and I got myself there, and I, at first, I gave away books. But then I would sell them, and it was usually pretty profitable. We got into them. So I started in 1991. The first year was very shaky. In fact, I had a promise with Vijaya. We made a deal. She would help me do this, which she did. But if after a year I had done six issues and it was going nowhere, I would realize the truth. You know, I don't know. I'd call up my old partners, or I'd go.
Yeah.
Thanks for animation.
I was going to say, did you have like a kind of
one year
point of sort of like, this isn't working, we got to switch it up? But if it's hitting after the third or fourth issue, kind of like
happy days. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I had made this deal in case my video wasn't working. I made this deal with Vijaya to go for 1 year, which would be six issues of the book, which for a long time, I really did a book every 2 months. I know a lot of people at the end, it took me a little longer because it was really hard to write something that complicated. But I really did. I did about a year in. First issue sold. Okay. It was enough to cover the printing bill and a little profit. Second issue went down. Third issue went down. Fourth issue didn't go down very much at all. And I started reading reviews about it. The Comics Journal wrote a little review in the back, a short one. But it was really good. And around that same time, that's when Maggie and Don Thompson did a big two-page spread on Bone and ran a preview of the next issue. And then and somewhere very early on, I'm trying to remember, Wizard was all about Image and Marvel and all the superheroes and that kind of stuff. But Palmer, that's a Tom Palmer Jr., had a thing in the back called Palmer's Picks. And he did a fairly large overview of Bone and was heavy into it. So that was after issue four. So issue five, the sales went up. And issue six, which was the killer one. I mean, I'm selling thousands and thousands. I'm selling, you know, 2,000 or 3,000. But that was the right direction. I was going down and now I'm going up. I think we got to like 4,000 issues or something with the sixth issue. And Jeb looked at me and went, All right. So now I gotta really do this. I've kind of figured the industry out. I've kind of got the pattern of the comic books. I kind of know how to do this. Because I had never done comic books on Bone. I'd always done four-panel newspaper strips. But something happened in the switchover from four-panel comic strips to the comic book. And it was a really good thing. Suddenly, my imagination was... If I wanted to do a joke, I didn't have four panels. I could set that joke up for four pages. That would make it funnier because you didn't see it coming at all. Yeah. I mean, I really, really felt something happen in my brain when I started drawing the comic books. I did not know this was going to happen. I did not know I was going to love this format, the length and all, the size of the pages. It was just... Everything kind of just worked together. It was a year-long journey that was scary and had some rough moments, but it had some really, really good moments. And then I was off and running.
Wow. And I always think of Wizard as well. When I think of Bone, and Wizard sort of grew as Bone was, and like whenever I would pick up Wizard back in the day, you would see Bone in there. There was like, you know, your Bone, Cerebus. When you saw indie books, I think that was probably the first time I saw it myself.
Yeah. I think it was the first time I saw the Tick as well. I think that's the first time I saw that.
Yeah. Same.
Well, another part of this story, which is I'm going to tell you about now, because I was making the effort to get out to where the comic book people were, fans, store owners, other cartoonists. And I was at one of the retailer shows, like it's Diamond one in Baltimore, or else it was the, I don't remember which one it was. But at one point, Larry Martyr brought Dave Sim over to me. And Dave Sim, I don't know if he'd already seen the book or he took one look at it, but he goes, come walk with me. So I got up and he put his arm around my shoulder and we went for a walk, and we really, something happened when he and I met. We got. And that very next year, we did like a poster, because, let's see, how do I put this? So Dave knew Colleen Doran. He knew a bunch of people that were self-publishing that were who were starting to do good stuff. And he invited me to join their little group. And I think I suggested, why don't we do like a jam drawing together and give it away at the show? And we did that. So we, I forget who started it, but somebody started it and shipped it around to each one of us. We all added our character to it. And then the next year at the retailer shows, we all kind of tabled together. I don't remember. Do we have our own booth? I do remember one where we were doing a signing together at a table next to Neil Adams, who was like a god to me. Okay, I love that guy. I was reading his comics. I was 8. I loved him. So I'm so excited about that. But we had this little jam drawing, and Image had come out in like 92 or something, I think. I don't remember exactly when Image started, but when the self-publishers, two of which were me and Dave, and I had rocketed up really quick, we're doing this jam, we did a jam drawing together, and all the retailers thought we were going to be a new Image. Now, we could have never planned that. It worked. And we just had a line that was like, you know, 400, 500 people. And we just signed it as fast as we can. It was fantastic.
Brilliant.
So, yeah. So I almost forgot this part. So now I'm playing all this other stuff that I was talking about. Maybe the most important part was meeting the other self-publishers.
Yeah.
Because suddenly there was being called the self-publishing movement, even though self-publishing had been around, but it was when Dick and I got together that it started being called the movement. And it was very interesting for a long time. We couldn't go anywhere. I mean, we couldn't even leave the convention center and go get lunch. People would follow us and want stuff signed. My best friend, who was my animation studio partner, actually said, people thought he was Hannah Montana.
I get that a lot as well, Jeff, to be fair.
It was, no, it was just, it was, I think I'm going to go back to the same thing I've said a couple times now. It's important to get your where the other cartooning community is. The people that buy them, the people that love them, the people that make them. And that's why I started a show 10 years ago. This year is our 10th anniversary of CSD, Cartoon Crossroads Columbus. And I wanted to create something like what I was able to experience. It's smaller. I mean, when the first year I went to San Diego, I stayed in, everybody stayed in the same hotel, fans and creators. Yeah. It was way smaller. It was only, it was like the first or second year that they were in the conventions, and they only had one hall. We didn't even fill that up. But I remember that first night checking in and then going down to the office, down to the lobby looking for Charles. And I ran into fucking Jaime Hernandez, who told me he's been using the same pen since the first issue. And I said, does it still hold ink? He goes, barely. So that's the one of the reasons I started this festival in Columbus was to kind of have a smaller event where we get the biggest guests we can, you know, and then we really encourage young people just getting into the business. And then we have dinners and we have events and we have things where we mix everybody together. And I do that very much because of the kinds of stories I'm telling you. And it's turned out really good. Like this fall, I think it's at the last weekend of September. But it's going to be our 10th anniversary. And it's grown quite a bit in the few years. And people do like that actual thing. Even the cartoonists like it.
It becomes a community, doesn't it? It becomes the people that go to the event.
It really does.
And they get to know each other. And
they come and they go.
Yeah, and they share knowledge and their own books. And it's inspiring, isn't it? It must be great.
A good convention you come away from inspired to create, don't you, I think? Mm. Yeah.
Sharing knowledge is a big part of it. Big, 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 big. This is what screwed me up this one time. Don't do that. Yeah, they do that. That's very good.
That's always the biggest knowledge as well, isn't it? Don't do this.
Yeah. Don't do this.
Yeah.
I had a lot of those.
just one question, Jeff, if you don't mind, is you mentioned Neil Gaiman, you know,
please,
being...
interrupt me anytime, man. I'm just...
Oh, man, thank you. But Neil Gaiman, did you get to meet him and thank him for that? I know he sent you the videotape, didn't he, and everything, but how long after was it before you sat down, had a drink with him and said, thanks a lot, dude, you know?
I think it was about, it was the next year.
Okay.
And I think it was WonderCon.
Right.
And it used to be like in a smaller, now it's in a big convention center, if it's still around. I think it is. Mm. And I was sitting in the bar, with Dave Sim, and this guy comes up, and it's fucking Frank Miller, and he just like slapped me on the back and says and I just said something really nice, hey, congratulations, welcome club or something, I can't remember now.
Good man. Yeah.
But then right after that, Neil Gaiman came up and did the same thing, but Neil actually said, you're going to have some awards with your name on them really soon. And I didn't know what that meant, but I don't know if he knew anything or he was just predicting, but I got to sit and drink with Neil and have a beer. So that was nice.
What I love about this, Jeff, is like there could be so many people that would say the same thing about like an interaction with you when they met you at a convention and stuff.
Yeah.
To hear you so giddy about comics
and
creating... It's just, especially like after this career and you made all these omnibuses and, you know, the comics industry or, you know, publishing is an up and down roller coaster. It has its peaks and its troughs. And you're still to this day so excited about it. It's fantastic. It's inspirational, to be honest.
Yeah.
After totally. 10 Eisners and 11 Harvey Awards, you know, it's just brilliant, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. It's still fun. It's still fun for me. I love the art form. I love the medium. And I got to tell you, I mostly love all the people. And I have really great fans. I mean, my readers are really awesome people. Of course, that about 15 years ago, it really changed when Scholastic called me.
Yeah.
and said, we're thinking about starting the first graphic novel imprint for young adults, and we would like to launch it with Boom. And now Jay and I have been trying to find a publisher, because we really did believe that Boom could make it in like a real bookstore to non-comic book people. But all our efforts were just everyone we talked to. We even talked to Scholastic. We made a big tour in New York in the early 2000s, and nobody was really interested. We even had one company that suggested, well, it is an interesting story, but maybe we should do like a page of print and then a page of illustration. I said, that's a big little book. I did a comic book. It's a graphic novel now. I said, no. It's and at that time, it was like in 15 languages already. It's like in 35 now. But at that time, it was, and I was like, this is all, I never said it was a children's book. I never said, all I did was just make this book that I would read. And well, I kind of got lost there. I might have had a little too much.
No, it's fine, man. No. I mean, one of the things we obviously, that has played a big part in your sort of career and your journey, whatever you want to call it, is your relationship with libraries as well. Now, that gets talked about a lot in the small press scene over here. And the benefits of getting your book into a library. Did you want to speak? Because I know initially that it was a no, wasn't it? You got turned away initially. Is that right?
That is very correct.
Right.
It was a big no. There's a distributor that distributes to libraries. Gosh, I really wish I could remember the name, because it's kind of important. Maybe we could look it up later.
It's not Penguin Random House, is it?
No. It's a distributor.
Okay,
right.
Never mind. It's like Diamond, but it's for libraries.
Right.
And I found out it was, and I apologize. I can't remember the name. I just feel silly. But anyway, they were very important to my story. But at first, it was a complete rejection. They had like three rules or something that if your comic book was self-published, they're not going to care. They're not going to distribute it.
Right.
If it's a comic, they're not going to distribute it. That was it. Two strikes and I was out, which was very infuriating to me. But I couldn't do about it. I could not do a damn thing. God, what was her name? I could see the Jay out through the door. She's outside, but she would know who it was. Maybe I'll ask her in a minute.
Okay.
But what happened was, in the early 2000s, I was still working on Bone. I worked on Bone until about 2004, but I was getting near the end. But I had like six or seven really well-selling graphic novels. What I didn't know is that because they were graphic novels and had spines, they were getting into the libraries. You know, like, librarians are geeks, right? A lot of them are comic book geeks.
Yeah.
And Bone, I didn't realize, because the distributors were very secretive, or they were back then when there was, you know, a lot of them. They were very secretive as to who they were selling with. They didn't tell me. I didn't know. I think it was Roy Root out in comics. He did comics out in Berkeley that I mentioned him earlier. He was selling tons to libraries in California, and I didn't know that. So all of a sudden, one day, Vijaya gets a call from... God, I gotta find out what the name of the place is.
Oh dear, it's amazing. Like the stories that
Jeff must
have on everything. Because listeners, like, if you don't know Jeff Smith, he's been there for all of it. You know,
he's nipped off to ask his lady, is he?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's totally done that. Yeah, he's totally done.
Brilliant.
So I love the specific attention to detail that we're getting here.
Yeah.
There's no lies on this show. You never get lies.
Wait till later.
Right, I said that.
Wait till later. Yeah. Well, when it's just the three of us, of course.
Yeah. This is gold.
I have the answer.
Oh, bro.
Okay.
She said it's Ingram.
Of course.
Ah, yes, Ingram. Right.
Yeah.
She's the boss. She's the boss. So anyway. I can't remember now. I don't remember where I was in the story.
You'd been turned away, and then I'm guessing a couple of years later they came a knocking, did they? Or because I can't think of a better kids book in a library than Bones.
Yeah,
no, totally.
That's where it was. So this company, if it was Ingram, called us and wanted to carry it. And my wife was like, we've been trying to get in with you for like 2 years. Why are you calling now? He said, the librarians told us we had to carry it. So I have been in love with librarians ever since. They saved me. Completely changed my life. So I love libraries.
That's fantastic.
Is that like libraries as well can be, like, for many of these books, not only do they give a second life to a lot of like classic and vintage graphic novels, but they're a real lifeline to a lot of books. Like, you know, libraries obviously always need more support. But God bless these librarians. Because when I was a kid, I went into a library and there was a small graphic novel section. Mm. A small section. I didn't care about all the history and the knowledge that was there. I went straight to that graphic novel section and that was all I picked up.
That's where I discovered Asterix and Tintin was.
Yes,
yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
Gold.
Yeah.
Gold. Absolute gold. And now Bone, of course, is gold that's sitting on these shelves. And there's a new edition of it coming soon. Is there a deluxe edition? Is that what I've seen on the pipeline?
Yeah. It's not really been decided exactly what it's going to be. We're actually doing that now.
Okay.
But the Thorn was meant to be the first of what we're calling a deluxe cartoon books library.
Right.
And nice. And people have been trying for years to get me to reprint Thorn, and I finally thought, let's start our deluxe library with that. So we did. And I don't hate it anymore. I used to hate it. I don't anymore. And it went very well. In fact, I don't even think it's come out in the real world yet.
Okay.
It did great in the Kickstarter.
Stormed it in the Kickstarter. Yeah. I was looking at it.
It actually comes out in June or July. I can't remember.
Okay, because it's got that landscaped thing that you get with comic strip books. It's like you do with the Chester Gold stuff and the X-19 and
exactly. Yeah. Or Calvin Hobbs. Well, no, Calvin Hobbs does the big books too, but he does a little.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But it's okay to do landscape that way because we started the Kickstarter with the Tukey books, which were both landscaped.
Yeah,
those were gangbusters as well. But then Thorne also did it, and so. The next one we're hoping for, I don't know if it's going to be for this year or not, because they're very, when you really want to, and yet it's almost like learning to go to the comic book industry again.
Yeah,
you have to find out all the things you need to do. You need to find out what's happening, what
how it's changed.
Like.
Yeah.
And but our next book is going to be a deluxe version of the first three books of Bone.
Bro.
And it'll be oversized. It'll be in black and white. And it'll have all the little bits and stuff between chapters that were in our original publishings, but are not, some of them are in the Scholastic stuff, some of them not in our one volume edition.
Yeah.
Plus, there'll be all sorts of back matter stuff, like in Thorn. It'll have pictures of me and Dave Sim and Colleen Doran.
Oh, nice.
And tell that story, the same story I just told you guys.
One of the things I liked about Tukey, Jeff, is, and I don't know whether you had this foresight, but I know certainly somebody like Chester Gould probably didn't, but it fits perfectly onto a computer screen because computer screens are landscape. Do you see what I mean? So I was reading it digitally on an iPad yesterday and this morning, and you can the page just fills my screen. It's just, and then you press the down arrow, and you're onto the next page. It's just a beautiful format for that, I think.
I actually started Tukey as a webcomic. And
of course
I made it.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
I did landscape to fit your computer screen. I did that. I had to learn a new layout, which is why there's some experimental stuff. And in the early chapters, every other page has a giant first panel.
Right.
Which is. I didn't bother with that after a while, but at first I was like, I gotta find some new layout. What is this layout? How do you get people to read the panels in the right order? That kind of stuff. You have to figure that stuff out.
Yeah, I love Tukey, man. I had a glorious morning this morning finishing it off. And
I'm working on the third one now. So.
Brill,
nice.
And one of the things I loved about it was the back matter and the attention to detail. You spent years researching this stuff. I mean, at one point in it, even the fruit they eat is a researched fruit that would have appeared in that time period, you know?
Yes, yep, it really was. And it still exists. It was just never, it was already sweet, so they never, like, genetically tried to change it. It's so you could still get that fruit that Tukey would have had. I thought that was, when I found that, I was like, gotta put that in.
Yeah. And he sort of litters the kid's bed with it, you know, for the morning. And, oh, it's beautiful stuff, man. Yeah.
It's really good. I'm hoping that there'll be 6 books.
Wow, okay.
I'm writing the 3rd one now, so we'll see.
Brilliant.
Amazing. I mean, it's quite... You don't do things by halves, Jeff. I mean, anyone that's seen a Jeff Smith omnibus, these are things that you could kill someone with if you drop them on their head. you know, you are not sort of...
My wife and my staff just love my books when they have to carry them around.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to carry them, Jeff, are you? Come on. Yeah. You're the star.
No.
You don't have to. Yeah, they need the wee.
When a Jeff Smith fan moves house, it's a whole deal. That's what
I know. Before we came on, we were chatting about Terry Moore, and he's got the same problem, isn't he? A lot of his, he does these sort of big, thick, brick like books as well, you know?
Yeah. And you know what's amazing to me about Terry? Is I was, you know, he read, you know, Strangers in Paradise. I loved it. What was next? Was it Echo?
And
Echo was next, and then Rachel Rising, I think.
That's it.
And then Rachel Rising. Yeah. And then it was, I think it was the next book. No, it was the one after that, where he was doing a Strangers in Paradise thing. But characters from the other series started showing up. We're just walking through a panel, and I'm like, wait a minute, what is going on here? Are you telling me this is a Terryverse?
Yeah. Is that something you're tempted to do? Are we gonna stray into the land of the bones?
I don't think so.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Can you imagine having Razzle Zaps into Boneville?
Suddenly it got very creepy. Yeah, it was a bit like that, yeah.
Oh dear. I mean, thank you for joining us this week, Jeff.
Yeah, it's
been
a joy.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Yeah.
Thank you,
I mean,
guys.
I feel like we've only...
Obviously, I enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, and it's wonderful to see. And, like, we're going to look forward to so many more books. And there's so many questions. We didn't even get into, like, what kind of pen do you use? So you've got to come back on the show in the future.
Yeah,
I'm going to save that for next time.
Nice.
Good man.
Nice.
Good man. Thank you so much.
So if people want to find out, like, when more about like Thorn and the upcoming stuff, where can people go to find out more?
Well, boneville.com, which is my webpage, and that would do it.
There's a lot on there, man. There's
a lot.
You've got like
there.
Loads of stuff on there, essays and appearances and books and shops and all sorts of things on there. Yeah.
It's good because like some people have a website and they don't always update it. They don't use it as like the news and blog and things like that. But you've got loads of great stuff on there.
Yeah, that's Kathleen who works with us and has been with us for decades.
Yeah,
she lovingly puts up stuff every day almost.
And big shout out to Kathleen because she helped set this up.
Shout out to Kathleen. I better give a shout out to Tom who colors my stuff and fulfills all the orders on the website. And, of course, the biggest shout-out to my wife, Vijaya. Wouldn't be a comment if she
If it's anything like our households, Jeff, she's the governor, I'm guessing.
Yeah, she's the MVP. She's everything. So, yes, thank you, Jeff. You've been awesome.
Thank you, guys. I'll talk to you again sometime.
Cheers, Jeff.
Mate. Need we say more? Folks, how good was that?
Pretty good.
Great.
Damn good. I'm still excited.
Yeah. It was just like, I mean, obviously Jeff's been making comics for quite a bit of time now, like and making some absolutely stellar independent comics that are like usually bestseller lists and stuff, but just the energy and the passion that he has for the media.
For people who couldn't see him, because we had our cameras on for a lot of the interview, he was just like really excited, really pleased to be there. It was just like lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we only, because we didn't want to jump in and interrupt, we just wanted to hear all of that gold, and we hope you enjoyed that.
To be fair, it was an interviewer's dream, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely, an interviewer's dream.
Great.
You can just sort of sit back and go, so tell us about comics, and that's it. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And if you, like us, feel like you could have listened to him talk for hours, then who knows? Maybe one day we'll get him back on the show. And yeah, we'll see. Hopefully, from what I can tell, he doesn't think we're complete idiots. I don't know. Oh, I don't know how we manage that.
But, yeah, it's the accents.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we do have accents, don't we? But we don't.
Not really. Everyone else in the world's got accents. We're just normal.
We're the only three people in the world that don't have an accent, do we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what we do have is a bunch of shout outs to go through. So, what shout outs do we have, gents?
I've got a couple. So, sent in to us was Armored issue 1. It's out this week in the UK. I think there's a staggered release in America this week and next week. From Clover Press. You guys signed up to the Clover Press mailer? It's a good one.
No, not yet.
Get quite a lot through it. Yeah, it's worth signing up. Maybe I'll sign up the pod email to it.
Yeah, good shout.
Created and written by Michael Schwartz, who's the guy who sent it to us. Illustrated by Ishmael Hernandez. Lettered by Fern Delgado. Edited by Chris Stevens. And it's got covers by, get this, Nick Patara and
that's
Jay Lee.
Amazing. Yeah, that's
and
amazing.
Jay Lee.
Yeah, they're the variant covers. And Jay Lee's is a variant foil cover, if you can believe that. How cool is that? It's about an orphan kid called Andy. His parents have disappeared and he's trying to find out what has happened. He's adopted by a couple who have also lost their son in under weird and strange circumstances. And he goes searching for things in the local castle and he gets more than he expected. It's got a sort of definitive YA feel to it. It's well worth a look. Go and have a look for that one. Ink Blot, the new comics festival, is at Nottingham, the VAT and Fiddle Pub in Queensbridge Road on the 18th of May, 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. inkblotfestival.com. Now, this is the second festival day for a sort of traveling festival. It's sort of doing different cities by the same organizer. So have a look at that one.
Wow, okay, that sounds great.
Yeah. Thanks to everyone again who backed Flesh and Ink. It's on its way. The Never Write Anything podcast is back, and I'm doing a little mini series of interviews with people I've collaborated with. I've just done one with Falpy, and there's one with Helena Edwardson, which will be relevant to you in a minute, Dan. So go and have a listen to it. We've got the Rapscallions, Cliff, Ian, and Forpy coming up. So that should be good.
Fantastic.
There you go.
Amazing. Dan.
Yes, me. It's my turn. Kickstarter, the collected letters of Courier Z, a collection of comic stories about the one space postwoman in a crime-ridden universe, illustrated by a mailbag of great artists. That's got another month or so to go. It's smashed its target. Go check that one out. We've got Schism by our friend Mark Abner. The Earth is dying.
He's on holiday. Away.
Oh, maybe he listens to this on holes.
Hopefully, yeah.
Payback's a bitch. A hero fights a bloody
way
to freedom.
Why do you always say it like that? I've noticed whenever you go, when you say something is a bitch, you go, I'm bitch.
A bitch.
South London, mate. South London.
Yeah, South London. Payback's a bitch. A hero fights a bloody path to freedom in an apocalyptic Spanish winter. Again, that looks absolutely fantastic. I bet that one. Can't wait to see that. And finally, we've only got a couple, maybe a day when you listen to this. Kill the Bride from TBH Comics. To be honest, comics. Love, Lies, and Lethal Intentions in the Galaxy's Most Unlikely Venue. So that's just crept beyond this goal. If we could get a couple more backers on that, that'd be absolutely fantastic. And I think
I have
that's
backed that
it.
One. Nice. Good to see it's made its money. Yep.
Nice.
We're still carrying on with the Star Wars draw-off. So go check that out in the Slack.
Nice. Well, if you're wondering how to join the Slack, we'll tell you about that in a bit. And also,
big shout out to everyone I met at the Mart today. Had a fucking glorious day of sitting in the sun and chatting and buying masses of really good comics today.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I might see a couple of you at Lawless Comic Con, which is in a couple of weeks, 25th and 26th of May at the Double Tree.
You double check with Sue about passes. You need to do that, guys, just so you know.
Make sure
I gave me your names, but just it's worth double checking.
Don't do the admin on air. What are you doing?
Otherwise, I'll forget.
In a minute, we'll go. So, who have we got for the 24th?
Oh, fucking hell, not him.
Oh dear. But no, if you're going to be there, I know some of our lovely listeners are going to be there. So, looking forward to catching up with a few of you there, and. Speaking of looking forward, perhaps we should talk about some comics that you should look forward to checking out, wherever you may be. I felt like I was going to sing that bit.
Doctor Who. Someone's stolen the music.
I don't get a reference to because I'm not watching Doctor Who.
Yeah, save that for your spin-off podcast, Tony, because right now we're going to be talking about comics, and you're going to start, so take it away.
Anno Domini 1900, the Peculiar magazine. I got sent by Peter Duncan. Thank you, Pete. It's a new series of an anthology out of Pete and the Sector 13 Comics people, and genuinely pretty impressed by it. Really nice. It's the sub-editors are Lawrence McKenna and Patrick Brown, and the cover has that combination. Have you seen this yet, guys?
No, I don't think so.
No.
It's got that sort of steampunk new... I don't know if you remember New Worlds magazine, a sort of sci-fi magazine.
Yes,
remember
I
that?
Do.
Yeah. Yes. A little bit of that with the sort of layout of it. It's got sort of a steampunky, old-school layout with a central image of a woman. She's sort of very striking in a red jerkin and breeches and boots with goggles on her sort of piled up blonde hair, and she's looking at the reader. But all the while, there's these two large, massive sort of octopus tentacles behind her. Just brilliant. Like one of the best covers I've seen in small press for a long time. Really good. Worthy of, like I say, like a New Worlds magazine or even a old school Metal Hurlant, you know, that sort of thing. Really, really good. Oh no, Dan's got a grin on his face. What's happening?
No, Joe just... No.
He's just happy, Tony. He's just happy. So, look at him.
Just,
he's
when,
so
he,
happy.
When he does that face, I look to see if he sent me a WhatsApp.
No.
Covers by Diego Guerra, who I'll mention in a second. There's eight stories, one of which is a one-pager and one of which is text and images. So not technically comics, but very close. I get the sense that Pete hasn't been sort of prescriptive around... Right, we want each strip's got to be 4 pages or 5 pages. I think he's let things breathe depending on the creation that's coming in through his inbox, I'm guessing. A couple of my favourites. The absolute standout is the one that is by the artist on the cover, Diego Guerra, and it's called The Woman Who Killed Louis Pasteur. And Diego reminds me in a way, of Brian Talbot's work. There's that, especially in his use of colour. The art's... It's absolutely worthy of being in a Bond S&A album, striking in backgrounds, foregrounds, historical content. Yeah, it's got a sort of visually personal immediacy to it as well, I suppose is the best way of putting it. As I read this story, I began to think, it features a woman called Anna Kingsford, who is a women's rights, anti-vivisectionist, vegetarian. And I began to think, this has got to be a real woman. This has got to be a real woman. So I looked her up, and she is indeed a real woman. She's one of the first women to go through medical school, and also I think one of the first people to go through medical school who refused to harm animals. Then she later on became a leading light in theosophy, which is another rabbit hole. Don't look that up in one.
I've never heard of that word.
Theosophy. I think was Alan Grant into it. I've got a feeling.
Okay.
She's so outlandish, and she lived from 1846 to 1888. And he takes her through, she's got a fucking life, but he takes her through her life, but he adds in these fantasy visual parallel elements to it. So some of the people appear like animals. There's a hallucination type sections to it. Fucking absolutely gorgeous. Just spot on. Second favorite thing is my favorite in the anthology, was the slow and somewhat irritated bank heist of 1877. One pager, art by Mark Bennington. And it kind of asks what the Beano, if you cross sort of Beano with some sort of quite knowing Victoriana bank robbery one pager, and it's done in that Beano style with the robber monologuing as he cycles away rather slowly on his penny farthing. For example, his handlebar of his penny farthing comes off, so he replaces it with his Victoriana handlebar moustache and stuff like that. And it's one of those strips that's full of little background gags.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like really nice, face hack style-y. Nice to see after that, nice to see Mal Earl's in there. I never don't want to see Mal Earl art in my life. He's really good in this. It features a character called Radcliffe, who's a character I think he has drawn previously in Aces Weekly. And it's a sort of, it's text and images, this story. It's not exactly a comic, not far off. It's called Radcliffe, Dawn of Steamonculus. Steamonculus, yeah. It's only £9. This.
Wow, okay.
I know Pete's stuck it in the Slack. There's a link in the Slack to buy it. 68 pages, A4, gloss, same as his other stuff, Sector 13, gloss laminated cover and uncoated interior pages. Go uncoated on your interiors, especially if you've got this sort of stuff. I love,
yeah.
I don't like coated interior pages. I don't know what it is with me, but just reflect the light too much.
It depends
much.
If you're sitting in a certain place and it's catching light and you're kind of like trying to angle the book to read it. You don't really want to be doing that.
No, and the colouring the book suits that flat map sort of kind of thing. It's going to be launched at Enniskillen Comics Festival on the 8th and 9th of June. Watch out, Johnny Cannon's going to be at that as well. And it's called Box of Rain Mag. boxofrainmag.co.uk/store. That's where you can find it. Or if you're on the Slack, go and give Pete a nudge in it and he can sort of stick the link into you. But you're really good. We go through these periods. One of the reasons DUI came up, wasn't it? Because we go through these periods and we think there's no good anthologies anymore. There's no good anthologies. Oh. And then a couple pop up at once. You think, oh, fuck me, this is good.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that. There you go. It's my first one, guys.
I'm going to jump in now with my one. Speaking of the Slack, I'm going to piggyback on that. Because our Slack community is wonderful, full of wonderful creative people on there making their own comics, etc. Friends, old and new, from all over the world. So if you want to join it, then please get in touch with us. There's loads of different channels and stuff.
Free to anyone.
Free to anyone. One of a regular Slack user, Ian Matthews, old buddy of mine, from back in the day. He's been working on it. He just wanted to make a comic for the longest time. He's an animator by trade, but he just got back into it and was drawing it all himself. And he had a particular vision for the comic he wanted to make. And what he has ended up giving the world, and I hope the wider world eventually, is the Truck Mutts.
I read this. It's great, isn't it?
When villainy looms large over Woofington City, the Truck Mutts are off the leash and on the case, deploying high-tech gadgets and weaponry from their supercharged monster truck, the Rough Rover. These heroic hounds crush crime and roll over for no one. This is both a love letter to the classic 80s sort of Fleetway sort of IPC magazine, sort of those weekly comics that we used to read, that usually the tie-ins. They were
remind me a bit of like Zoids or something like that. That period,
Zoids, Mask. Even there was a shout out to Mask as the cover of this.
Real Ghostbusters,
which I was a huge fan of. Yeah, the cover of this is a homage to the cover of the first issue of the Mask comic, which was published in late 1986. But I love that he's put little details there. There's something in the inside cover that talks about, you know, what he wanted to do, and this is a comic that he just wanted to make a comic. He loved it, and he just wanted to make something fun. He's not in it for.
There's a note to the newsagent you can cut out as well.
This is wonderful because you've got this story of Laser and Taser, who are both the Truck Mutts, and their villain, Dr. Rotfang, who, as the inside cover will tell you, just in case you didn't know, is a mad scientist. And there's also Herbie, the street food vendor, which is a character that I'm sure Tony loved. he's sort of giving out hot dogs. This is the first one is very much a hot dog based story, as this hot dog turns into a giant. There's almost a little bit of a kaiju like element to it as well. Monstrous sort of. I'm not going to spoil it for you because you need to check it out. But basically, this hot dog becomes sentient, and the truck mutts have to face it down. But like Tony said, throughout the book. It's the attention to detail that broke it. We've spoken in the past on this show how we love fake ads that are done certainly specific. They're on the nose. They're so like, oh, I remember reading those ads and seeing like ads for Three Musketeers chocolate bars, and these are exactly like that kind of thing. And this is no different because there's a subscription. Like Tanya said, there's a Dear News Agent thing that you can cut out and give to you. This is a book that should have come out in the 80s, the one that just didn't exist. Do you know what I mean? It feels like I've picked out from a comic mart. Do you know what I mean? It's got that.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. When I picked up a load of Action Force the other day at the comic mart, this would have been in there somewhere.
There is like adverts for another book called Get Groovy with Garrett, which is a holiday special, a bumper size, 32 pages, available while stocks last.
Does Chris Carter do something in it as well?
Yes,
is that right?
Chris, Carter's in there as well, because there's also a strip at the back. Edits by Danny Abram, Worry Wart fame. And I just had immense fun with this. I think when you can capture the spirit of what you're going for. We've seen so many homage comics, and we've taken part in some of them. But there are people who want to homage comics, and they're not getting it right. Do you know what I mean? Because you have to be faithful to the kind of source material, and you know, whether it be a parody or it's got to hit that right note. And Ian gets it, I think, because he grew up on them, like we did. He's probably got a huge cardboard box in his attic somewhere full of these sort of things. I hope there's, because you see the truck mutts as well. They are these two dogs that have a Tony, grow up. This is. I mean, I'm not going to say what he just put a note for on the video, but this is why we don't do video shows. But the truck mutts are the classic animals who have a vehicle as well. There should be toys of these things. Do you know what I mean? It feels like
the banana splits.
Yeah, yeah. There's also a free badge as well. There's a sticker for it.
Did you get a free badge with yours?
No, I didn't.
Maybe it fell off in the news agents, a lot of those badges did. Yeah.
I always had this theory that, like, the news agent, if he liked the free gift, it was like, I'm having that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, yeah. Why would he want some fucking little plastic frisbee? Yeah.
Why not? But at the end of the book, you see the Rough Rover become something that would be under every kid's Christmas tree. And
I got a hard sell at the Comic Mart today by some bloke going, would you be interested? Just looking at his stall, I thought, oh no, this bloke's going to talk to me. He said, would you be interested in the Marvel UK reprints of The Punisher? And I went, oh no, I'm right, I've got those, thanks. Oh, you've got them, have you? Well, I'm willing to bet you don't have the badge. Oh God, where's this going? I said, no thanks, and I left.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, there's enough of that hard sell. But no, Truck Mutts is just great fun. Also, full colour, and Ian went to the lengths of trying to get it printed in the size and paper stock of the originals.
That's fantastic. It needs is your surname on the front cover in biro with your house number.
Totally. Yeah. That's exactly what that is. Perhaps, like, you know, if he ever gets back on the con circuit, or if he gets orders like on the Slack or whatever, maybe as a little extra, he can write the person that's going to buy it their surname in the top right.
That'd be nice.
That's a great way to sort of
sign. I bought a load of Valiants today, and they've got all that written on them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with these sort of books as well, there's no sort of preciousness to those vintage sort of British comics. Isn't it? I think it's part of the charm now when I pick up something from a Comic Mart and I see someone's surname on it. It's they're great days.
It is what it is, man.
Truck Mutts is great. It is real good.
There you go. Look at this. And you bought this today.
Whoopi.
And it's got the address on the top of it. Look.
Hey, there you go.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah, yeah. Amazing. So if you like those sort of vintage comics, or you just want, you know, a healthy dose, and like, Ian is a great member of the community, so go and support him and ask for a copy, because he just wants to put it out there for people.
Yeah.
So
he's just asking postage, isn't he? I think.
Yeah, just asking postage, because he just wanted to make comics, which is what this show's all about.
Yeah.
So the only problem you got, Ian, is we want more of them now. So you've done yourself a disservice there. I always say that when someone makes me a good cup of tea, I'm like, you've got a problem now, because I know how good you are at making tea.
It's like, you're that bloke at work, aren't you? You know.
What are you talking about?
When someone makes you a cup of tea, he goes, oh, you're pretty good at making a cup of tea. I'll get you to make another one. Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm stirring mustard into your next one. Yeah.
I never make someone a dodgy cup of tea.
Never disrespect the tea making game, Tony. You've gone too far there.
Recently, I've gone back to tea, you know.
Yeah.
Last 2 weeks, I've gone back to tea.
Yeah.
That's weird. I've drunk tea for years.
Oh yeah, I cycled back off of coffee relatively recently, back onto tea.
Yeah.
We've got a love of tea.
The Britishness coming out.
Yeah,
I think it's because I like tea. When I'm a bit poorly, I like a bit of tea. Yeah. It sort of helps me a bit more than coffee does.
Do you like a fruit tea?
Coffee. I like ginger tea and green tea, but I prefer like normal tea, you know, with milk in it.
Yeah. Anyway, join us next week when on the cafe.
Talking about hot chocolate.
Next time we'll be talking. Don't get me started on hot chocolate, because I've got certain places.
That's
that
things.
Make it very. Yeah. Whenever. Is it immature to get hot for a grown man to get hot chocolate?
No,
not if it's cold out. You're coming from a fireworks night or something like that.
Just in general,
that.
I had a hot chocolate today.
What time? What time was it?
Well, it was about 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock.
So it's too early for hot chocolate, man.
Nah.
What are you doing?
Not if it's a good hot chocolate.
Don't know. Let write in and let us know what you
think. Okay, okay. Yeah. And I tell you what, if anyone gives me abuse on this...
That'll
never happen.
You're hiding in a bush.
Right. I will say this, right? Just be careful. All good jokes, I will name and shame and ruin people on it.
Come on, you gotta have loved that one, just the fucking hand with a stick out of the bush.
Weren't
you like in the burning bush for Jesus or something?
No, good stuff. But much love to the Slack community, by the way.
You went, I don't like it, but I knew something.
With a laughing face. Anyway, speaking of laughing face, Dan. That's a horrible segue.
That's fine.
He's been looking at something on the screen. He wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, sometimes, he never pays attention at this.
Sometimes the segues work. No, I was looking at Clear Run 2.
Oh, there you go.
Art 92 Comics, story by art by Helena. This, I ordered this and it went to my work, and I haven't been to work in two or three weeks because I guess it's done around the house. Yeah, that and lazy, which I had a chance to read it this week. I've only ever owned one dog and it was an absolute fucking nightmare. But Helena and Damien. Damien and Helena got a bit more kind of suited to the task with their greyhound Marty. This is the second issue of the series, which the first one dealt more with how they took Marty on and kind of like how he became part of the family. And this is like the further adventures of kind of there's dog farting, that features highly in it. But kind of working out, kind of getting in the headspace of your animal, your dog, and working out what they like and don't and why they're certain ways. And obviously, near the end, it goes quite tragic where Helena goes through some medical complications and how that affects the dog's behavior. And it's kind of, I didn't really see that coming. But
when I talked to Helena this week on the other podcast, I did mention to her that you came up with the idea Clear to Run. I didn't mention that.
Yeah, I don't want to.
And I mentioned how, don't bring it up again, it's painful. And then I also mentioned how the dog was particularly nice to her when she was ill. And when I was ill recently, my dog just jumped on my balls.
But your dog, let's be honest, wants to take you off of this mortal plane.
It's like I live with just a wild animal who attacks me every time I go in the living room. That's just like how my life is now. Yeah. He's been banging his head against the door to this room while we've been recording.
Psychopath?
Yeah,
was he like Jack Nicholson from The Shining?
A little bit. He just bangs his head against it. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. He is very cute, though, when you look at the pictures.
He does look cute, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's does look cute. Yeah, yeah. It's just a shame he's going to rip your bollocks off and beat you to death with them.
He's going to fucking bite my cock off in the night.
I remember seeing one of those dog behaviourist programmes, and like, whenever this guy tried to sit on the settee, the dog would be fucking on the settee going at him. And the behaviourist said, basically, we're going to turn around and walk backwards onto the settee. He won't see it as a threat. And as soon as he did that, the dog wasn't bothered at all.
I just have to walk backwards through my life.
Yeah, just walk backwards. There you go.
I mean, it's essentially...
Things you do for a grief-free life.
I don't know how that's going to work in the toilet.
So basically, like, when you're walking backwards, all you're doing is you can see it when the dog lunges at you, jumps at you, rather than being surprised.
The other day, I thought, where's he gone? I couldn't see him. And he'd bitten the back flap of my trousers pocket. Oh. And he was hanging off it. Where he'd gone to bite my ass.
You don't like anyone hanging off your back flap either, do you? Yeah.
Don't like that back flap action. Yep.
Animals, yeah. So if that's not sold you on getting a dog,
that's the best advert for a comic that's ever been done.
Yeah. So and you can listen to more about Clear Run and Clear 2 Run on the Never Run End thing.
Thank you, Daniel.
Which you published recently. Yeah. But Art 92 got a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
With the Galaxy Grappling Alliance, got Pre-Mortis. And Helena runs a series of they call life drawing courses. If you,
I think she's
going
to go back to sort of doing sort of live art stuff. Yeah, yeah.
So
I think she does some where she takes the dog with her.
Okay,
that's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah. Go art92.com. Go check that out.
Yeah, so that's all letters.
I've got the second book as well, which I can touch on briefly. Has everyone done that?
Touch away.
Go and touch it.
Aliens: The Original Years, the Epic Collection from Marvel Comics. which covers Aliens 1988 issues 1-6 and Aliens 1989 1-4.
That must be the Dark Horse books. That's yes. the Dark Horse yeah. books, isn't it?
And but reprinted by Marvel because I got the rights. Yeah. Now,
when Aliens was good.
Yeah, it's got loads of stuff in the back, like the covers about like the mastheads and cover graphics, and some of them absolutely fucking love it. I didn't realize Sam Keith done some artwork for this.
Yeah, he's great, man. I love his stuff.
Yeah. Actually, I just want to correct that. I don't want to throw shade on any Aliens books because I haven't really read any of them. They could be quite good. So,
I've read the recent ones.
Artist I absolutely love, and I've shown you a couple of bits and bobs for him, and I looked up his name earlier, like the pronunciation, and I thought
you made a note of it, and then you put that.
You remembered it. He logged it.
He logged it. All of a sudden, he saw something shiny. He looked at that, and then looked back, and
so the artist is Den Bovis, B E A U V A I S, and he's kind of got like a painted style, and he just fucking gets it. Absolutely gets it. I don't want to be down on the artist before, but the other guy drawing it, I'm not going to name a shame. It's just a bit kind of like vanilla artwork. And I was like, at times I was kind of struggling to sort of stay with the comic. But as soon as it got to like the Den stuff and like I'd recognized it before, because I think it'd been reprinted in the UK in some comic or another. I'd definitely seen it before. I was like, fuck me, man, I'm in on this. And I wish this is the kind of film we would have got after Aliens and not all the stuff. I mean, as much as I love fucking Alien Resurrection and all that, Alien vs. Predator. yeah, but if you want to carry on reading Aliens, that's the kind of shit you should go for. It's a real fun read.
I forgot that Paul McGann's in Alien 3. I've only ever seen it once. I think I'm going to have to go back and watch that again.
Spoilers,
he's one of the only survivors.
Oh, okay. I won't watch it now.
Sorry, Danny.
I went to that talk with fucking Josh Whedon, didn't he? And he was talking about making Alien Resurrection and some of the ridiculous things the studio were doing. And there's a bit with the crew, they're all pirates, aren't they, trying to get off the space station because it's invested by aliens. And they've all got their guns and stuff. And for some reason, one of the team leaves to go down a corridor to pick up a pistol.
Yeah.
And he was sort of saying to the people, there's no point to doing this. Like, they've all got guns. Why would they go down that? That's like, just do it.
Yeah. Michael Wincott, that actor, is as well. Love that actor. He was a bad guy in The Crow. And he was my favourite character in that Alien Resurrection. He's not in it long enough.
Yeah. So Robin Hood as well. Yeah. Gravelly voiced.
Yeah. Anyway.
You get a chance to ask Jeff about Robin Hood, because that's his like long-held fantasy comic, isn't it? He wants to do a Robin Hood comic. Imagine that.
Really?
That'd be
great. Jeff,
you've got to come back on to talk to us about that.
That was my first Disney movie, Robin Hood. I love that film.
Oh, it's an absolute banger.
Brilliant film.
Yeah.
I can't start singing that song about.
I think it's my favourite Robin Hood on the screen.
Yeah.
I think it is, me too, man. Yeah. Well, I like like Robin of Sherwood or whatever that was. I like that. The Hooded Man.
Oh, yeah, I love that fucking series.
I like that series. Yeah. Ray Winston was that. We forget, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was.
Michael Craig.
Sometimes when I'm at work, and the TV's sort of on the background, like showing adverts and stuff like that, and it's on the channel and there's reruns of that. It's fascinating just seeing the hair.
It was Michael Praed, then it became Jason Connery, didn't it? Jason, do you remember? Connery, he changed halfway through, didn't he? Yeah. Went blonde.
He fucked off to Dallas, didn't he, Michael Praed? Like, he left for big American money.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. What happened to him now, eh?
I know. If you're listening to this show, join the Slack community. You can get in touch with us, and we'll join you on.
But more about Robin of Sherwood and other stuff.
Yeah, and we'll set up a channel for it.
I sent you a picture of Robin from Robin of Sherwood, Vince, and attached to it, it said something like, "I don't like your girlfriend."
Yeah, you are grown up like that. Yeah. So why don't you tell us about your second comic, Tony?
Okay, so Kaijus and Cowboys. We got sent this by the very particularly nice guy, Frankie B. Washington, on the socials. It's hard to describe what it is. For me, in a way, it's like Outlaw Underground Comics crossed with the ABC Warriors, or crossed with something from 2000 AD.
That sounds fucking great.
Yeah.
Written by Matthew Blair, art by Frankie B. Washington, letters by Mike Stock. Out of the blue, Mike appears.
Nice.
The first few issues, and in fact, throughout, it relies on the visuals and not so much on the dialogue. Issue one, it starts with a humanoid-ish robot. He doesn't look dissimilar from Hammerstein, that sort of area of sort of war robot type thing. He appears in a dinosaur-drawn carriage, and he's wearing like a long coat and a Western-style hat, you know, like a cowboy hat. and he's he uses a wire to connect to the head of a dead female android he finds and discovers there's been this massive, it's kind of a cross between a gorilla and a rhino is rampaging across the country, and he goes on to kill it using his dinosaurs. Like, it's just a really good concept. Issue one expands. So there's a few of these, and they're all on Global Comics as well, actually. Just coincidentally, he sent them through to me, and he said, but if you've got Global Comics, they're on there as well. And I thought, oh, that's probably, to me, an easier way to do it, rather than download all the Dropboxes. Issue one expands on the universe, and the robot, he's called the Robot Without a Name, goes in aid of a city that's invaded by kaijus, and he gets this sort of robot engineer, looks a bit steampunky, with sort of almost like Doc Ock arms, but only two of them. He's those sort of extendable metal arms. Issue two goes fucking full into Shogun Warrior's land versus giant kaiju.
Awesome.
Brilliant. You can just tell that Frankie is having a fucking absolute ball with it. And it ends on a cliffhanger into issue three, all gearing up for the ultimate kaiju. I think from what he was saying, this is a planned 12-issue series. And these guys are just invested in it. They've just gone for this style, and they've just gone large on this just crazy, not far from Lucas Kowalczyk, I'm going to say, a little bit like, okay, almost like a, yeah, slightly more rendered version of Lucas's work. Visual and colourful assault on the eyes. Brilliant cowboy droid designs. Frankie's got this style. I'm not sure if this is like the concept they've gone to, where some of the stuff is like really close up. So you'll get close ups on eyes especially. But while something massive is going on outside of the panel, and then he'll pull back to show what it is, which I think is an interesting way of doing it. And it does work to push character, even though they're these sort of quiet, silent, very rarely speaking. I think he's given him a sidekick because the robot with no name doesn't really speak much, you know, so he's got this sidekick, which is always the way of doing it, I think, sometimes. Nice action packed. It's called Hunter Bot, the bot with no name. And they're from Cambrian Comics. Issues 0 to 3, so that's 4 issues, is on Global Comics, and issue 3 onwards is also out on indieplanet.com, and it's had a recent Kickstarter. I think it's recently been on Kickstarter, but go find it. Kaijus, Kaijus, Kaijus and Cowboys, issues 0 to 3, just a good small press indie publishing rollicking fucking ride of a book. Yeah, good stuff.
Amazing.
That's my second one.
We need more of those in the world. And we need more episodes like this. Like all our episodes, but ones that just... I don't know about you guys listening, but we are excited about making comics. And we'll be buzzing for days. And we hope you enjoyed our chat with the one and only Jeff Smith. Surely it's inspired you to pick up your copy of Bone or Razzle or just anything. So yeah. And definitely...
Bone is one of those books you can reread and reread, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely a timeless quality one.
It's so strange in a way. I don't know. I remember being taken from, and I didn't read it till I was in my 20s, but I sort of got it in issues. But it's such a strange yet familiar scenario.
Yeah.
So we're drawn in because it's got that sort of animation comic strip effect to it, but it goes off in such a way, you know, the creatures in it and stuff. You think it's strange. Yeah.
And then the way it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger as it goes on. Yeah. It's a ride, and that's and it's brilliant.
You become invested and you care about them, don't you? That's the thing with them, the characters in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Much like people who have become invested and care about us.
No.
But if you do want to get in touch with us, let us know perhaps if there's any small press or indie comic process stuff you want us to talk about, anything to highlight, topics, subjects. Perhaps you have a charity endeavor you want to just get the shout out to. We're always listening for that. And there's several different ways.
Let's interrupt there, Vince. If they've got a book, you've got an indie book, small press book, feel free to send it in. Happy to take a look at it.
Yeah. And there's several different ways you can get in touch with us. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on social media at awesomecomicspod on Instagram, at the awesome pod on X or Twitter. I can't believe I've got to say both, but where we'll be posting, retweeting, and just comics positivity. That's all we need. We need more of that in the world. Thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listened on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review. and subscribe. Helps get the word out about the show and everything that we talk about on a weekly basis. And if you listen to us on any other networks, well, Spotify, you can leave a comment and a nice review as well. So please do that as well if you heard us there. As for Amazon, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what are the networks we on, Tony?
We're on the very sad podcast network. No more Yah Yah Ding Dong.
Stirring stuff. So, where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
NeverOnAnything.com. Yes. Somebody asked me this week why I called it Never On Anything, and I don't know.
Because you never iron anything?
Yeah. I don't technically ever iron anything, but you know. No.
Well, there you go.
People who does nowadays?
It's not a lie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I used to iron more. Now I've given that.
Iron your socks and all that sort of shit, didn't you?
Iron? Yeah. No. Who irons their socks?
People.
Some people.
Psychopaths.
It's a mugs game.
Ironing.
I do like your blogs every week, T, on a Wednesday.
Thank you, baby cakes. Thank you. There's a good one coming this week.
Read it, read and retweet.
Yeah.
Thank you, mate.
And where can people find you, Dan?
You can find me on X at Vanguard Comic.
I love the fact that he's doing that every week. Yeah.
You know,
amuses himself.
I've lost it.
Exactly. That's why I did it.
You find me on Twitter, AKX, at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard Comic at vanguardcomic.com. Should I say Vanguard again?
Go on. No. Say it once more with a
vanguardcomic.com.
Nice.
Slow down a bit there.
And you can find me. Well, it's been a hot day. You can find me on social media at Jester Diabo. Thank you very much for listening, folks. Plenty more awesome comics content, which isn't a pun, by the way, whenever I say that. But there's some great shows coming up, some reading challenges we're going to catch up on, as well as some more exciting guests. So thank you very much for listening this week. Wherever you are in the world, we hope you're happy and reading the comics that you're loving. And if you're not loving those comics, read another comic. Try something new. And you never know. You know, something from that small section in the comic book store that says small press and independent comic.
Make a comic. The comic you want to read isn't in the world. You make it.
Exactly. Make it. Love it. And then we'll read it and shout it out on the show. Pace it forward. Don't do that.
Combine both. Make love to it.
Well, I mean, you'd have to print another copy. We're not going to go down that rabbit hole.
Not on this show.
But not on this show because we're highbrow. And expect more highbrow
chat. I thought meant a future episode, but maybe.
Yeah. catch us next week, and from Dan, Tony and myself in ACP Towers, have a brilliant week. And actually, I've forgotten something. What else should they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.